In lineup logic, it's 2019 and the new PGA Tour season is upon us. I was gonna say it has begun, but it hasn't quite begun yet. Kicking off the season with the Safeway Open in Napa, California, we got a lot of new names, some familiar names, thank God, or else this would be a giant headache. And with me I have Jared Smith, who you may remember from probably about 5 or 6 weeks ago. It's been a little while. Jared, how's it going?
It's going good. It's good to be back on here talking some golf. I know it's been a bit since I was on the podcast as kind of life got in the way, got a little busy with work and stuff like that. But I'm ready to kind of kick off a new season. You said it's 2019. It's not quite 2019, but 2018-2019 season.
Don't they technically call this the 2019 season? Yeah, I guess.
You're right. It's like the fall swing or whatever. You know, it's the fall swing of the 2019 season. Yeah.
Yeah. So before you know it, DraftKings is going to wipe out all the history, and everyone who doesn't keep up with this stuff regularly is going to be straight up lost.
That's why you get subscriptions to like Fantasy National and stuff, so you have all that information.
Exactly. And that is, this is probably, like I was just saying to you, I really do think, even though there are all these names that might not seem that familiar, some of these names you haven't seen in like 5-6 weeks since the playoffs began, I really think you can make good money in these weeks because the people who know what they're talking about or take the time to listen to people who know what they're talking about are like, you go from one step ahead of the field of the rest of the people playing to like 10 steps ahead, like immediately. Right.
Mm-hmm.
But it can be very tricky because, I mean, look, we've got like Phil Mickelson priced over 10,000. But again, that kind of proves my point there. I think you'd have to be very stupid to play Phil Mickelson this week after what we saw out of him last week at the Ryder Cup.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure Phil's probably going to take his paycheck and go home this week. I mean, not saying he probably can make the cut with this field, but I would not be shocked if it's two rounds and done for Phil this week.
And if we're talking DraftKings, you look at that salary and it's a bit much. Jared, did you watch the Ryder Cup?
Of course I did. Who didn't? I didn't do my usual thing just because it was over in France. Usually I watch like all day coverage, but I did my best on the weekends to kind of sleep in. I did have to work on Friday, so I wasn't able to catch some of the morning stuff. But no, I was able to watch it, and I wouldn't say shit. Shocking in the sense that I was surprised that the United States lost that by that much. I wouldn't say shocking that they lost. It's, you know, they haven't won in Europe in 23 years or 25 years or however it was. And I mean, as much as that they're, you know, as deep as the U.S. is when it comes to their roster, it just doesn't matter in that kind of match play team format. I mean, just, it's really going to go out there and who's going to play the best. And it seems like there was a lot of other things going on inside the U.S. Locker room or team room that the Europeans didn't need to deal with. And of course the Europeans had an advantage, I think, a lot with the type of golf course they played. It is crazy. You know, that I know in the DFS world right now, there's like a big talk about like course history and stuff like that.
It's getting ridiculous.
Yeah, but it is pretty ridiculous. But the only point I will make was it is fascinating that the only American who really played well this past week for the United States was the only American to actually play in that, to play in the French Open, and that was Justin Thomas. So it just to see he had a little bit more confidence than everybody else on that golf course. And yeah, like I said, the Europeans play that on a regular basis, and they're pretty familiar with it. And, you know, they grew the rough along and narrowed the fairways and just took advantage of it. And the United States just – the biggest thing was, I think, that Friday session and the foursomes when they came out and just obliterated them 4-0. And it just seemed like from there on out, the United States just didn't know what to do with themselves. And I think there was a little bit of panic on Furyk's side and a couple of moves that he made. But overall, I don't think it mattered. It's just Molinari, Fleetwood, and the rest of the gang were just better. And then there's nothing you can do about that.
Yeah, it was very interesting. I had a couple conversations heading into the first round there, the first day. And USA had been favorite for a while. I think it was probably decreasing the odds. I wasn't following them that closely. But you look at the two rosters, and you have to have a feeling that that European team is pretty damn good.
Yeah, they're good.
I think a lot of people around here probably have a bias where you see some of those names. You see Tiger Woods coming off of his tour championship win. You see Justin Thomas, Ricky Fowler, some of the other big names, and you're like, you start thinking about it again and again, and you might try to make yourself believe and understand why they were favorited. Well, yeah, and then you take into account the fact they're in France, the fact they're at that type of course that, like you said, had been played this year, and you look at the guys up top, like Sergio had not had a great season, but he was right there. I think he came in seventh in that tournament. Alex Noren won it. And then the only American you see even playing there or seeing the course before was Justin Thomas, who I knew struggled, but then I think he finished pretty well in the tournament earlier in the year. Do you know where he finished?
I don't know exactly, but I know I think you're right. I think he struggled early and then kind of battled his way back in that tournament. I don't think it was like I have to look that up while you're kind of saying.
Yeah, I want to say he was like top 15, maybe top 10, but I think he had a very bad first round, if I remember correctly.
Yeah, top 10. Overall, okay. He finished 4 under par. He said Noren won it, and then Rahm played it and finished 5th.
John Rahm there. We knew DJ had been struggling. We hadn't really seen Brooks Koepka do anything crazy. You're thinking about it, and it's like Dustin Johnson is Dustin Johnson. Brooks Koepka shows up to play when it matters. Ricky Fowler had seemingly been coming into form. Spieth is Spieth. He's looking better lately. You got Justin Thomas, who's just as consistent as they come, and you're like, you can convince yourself that United States would maybe even be able to run away with it.
Right.
And then you see Friday morning, I woke up and I look and I'm like, oh, here we go. And it was 3-1. I'm like, all right, US is going to take this. And then, like you said, Friday afternoon, just the shutout afternoon, and that just changed all the momentum. Tiger Reed, Tiger DeChambeau, Tiger with the big fat goose egg.
Mm-hmm.
And like it was crazy. And then even Sunday, like Webb Simpson starting off with the win over Rose, and you think, maybe this could actually happen. And just
there was a window there for about 20 minutes where there was definitely a pathway for the United States. I think it was like right after Tiger had like birdied the 12th and had cut to his match to like even. And I think the United States had won like their first 4 out of the 5 and had split the, so like they had cut the deficit to 1, and then Tiger was right there. And all they really needed to do, I think Fowler was down 1 at one point with Garcia. And I want to say Phil had made a charge. at one point, and he was down by one to Molinari, and I think they needed DJ to beat Poulter. And if all those kind of things did happen, which was very possible at the moment, because that was, I think it was right after DJ made that bomb of a putt too. Victory was right there. I mean, they had it, but it just seems like everybody kind of ran out of gas. Seems like Tiger was completely and utterly gassed. It seems like Tiger needs to like go into a 3-month coma and just rest up in one of those like chambers that they have for people to heal up. I guess everything that we're learning about, Patrick Reed being Patrick Reed. Now I will say, like, I've been kind of a defender of Patrick Reed for a while. Not saying I like Patrick Reed. I'm just saying, like, I understand, kind of his attitude and, using that to his benefit. But, man, he came off really as, he came off as a dick, like, afterwards. He really did. I mean, I know that's kind of his persona, but his whining really rubbed me the wrong way. And then apparently there was like an awesome possible brouhaha between Dustin Johnson and Brooks Koepka, which I don't know. I think a lot of golf fans would see like pay pay-per-view to see them go toe to toe. But
100%.
Just seemed like everything was kind of off. And I think, Patrick kind of doing his whiny thing didn't help matters. I think, which is funny because Patrick is doing this whole thing where he's, kind of calling everyone out where honestly, I mean, if we're being honest, like the only way Patrick Reed is ever going to be back on a Ryder Cup team is if he makes it in points. And there's a pretty good chance that he may not do that again, like especially with all the young guys that are coming up behind him in the form that he's kind of showed this year. I mean, he only really made the team on points this year because he won the Masters. Other than that, he was really struggling all year with consistency. And it's just interesting that he kind of came out like that, where he's really never guaranteed a spot here moving forward of being on the team. And it was just interesting that he did that. Like I said, moving forward, I think I'm just going to give less respect to Reed moving forward. And I just think that, they just got to get back there and they'll get back to the United States and probably win and then try it again next time in Europe. It's just the way it goes. Just thinks that it just wasn't that close at the end.
Yeah, it would have been cool to see it come down to it. And I 100% am in the same boat as you with Patrick Reed. I was doing the best I could all year to defend the guy. I've said this a million times, but I was on him in the Masters, and that just like I loved it. I was a very happy person that day watching him win. And then when all the news came out about this and that about Patrick Reed, I was like, hey, guess what? I don't care because I'm going to Las Vegas. Thank you, Draft.
Thank you,
Patrick. And, thank you, Patrick Reed. Thank you, DraftKings. And it was awesome. Whatever. The Ryder Cup did not turn out the way a lot of us would have hoped. But long story short, you could have seen it coming. Something to be said about camaraderie, everything that's been coming out with the European team. They look like they were having the time of their life. But then again, if the United States won, we'd probably not be hearing half of the stuff we're hearing now.
Right. That's the whole thing. Everyone like talks like, oh, there's chaos in the U.S. team room. Well, like if they ended up winning, you would never have heard any of this. It would have been everything would have been fine. Everybody would go along their own ways. I mean, this happens when you lose. People just second guess everything, and people and golfers are going to complain about this or that. And the Europeans are going to be happy as hell because they won. So, it's just funny how it all works out. But I will say the best thing that came out of this whole thing was the whole Molinari Fleetwood bromance. That was a lot of fun. And then the European Fleetwood Molinari chance, that was awesome. So I mean, the Europeans do it pretty good when it's over there, and it was a lot of fun to see. But yeah, congrats to the Europeans. sucks, but we'll hopefully get them back in the United States when they come back here in 2 years. And the team could be looking completely different. You know, the United States team could be looking completely different than it is now. I mean, you're going to have your staples. You're going to have DJ. You're going to have Fowler. You're going to probably have Spieth and Justin Thomas and Brooks Koepka. And hopefully Finau for a while, because he seemed like he really enjoyed it. But, I mean, other than that, everyone else on the whole team can be completely different. I mean, yeah, I mean, you got the young guns for United States, DeChambeau and Cantley coming up, and Xander Schauffele probably should have made the team or could have made the team. So you got a newer breed of guys that I think will have a little bit more camaraderie in the team room than in years past, and we'll just see how it works out.
Yep. Yeah, I totally agree with that. It's going to be very interesting to see what happens in 2 years, what the teams look like. You got some older guys. You got some of the young guys that might not necessarily be sticking around. So, like you said, congratulations to the Europeans. It was well fought. And I think, I mean, if you watched 10 minutes of that, they deserved it. They really did.
Yeah.
And with that said, I'll mention very quickly that Tiger won the Tour Championship, because we have to mention that. But right, we should probably jump into this week, because Tiger, like you said, he's going into his freeze chamber for the next 3 months. We'll see him.
He's going to be in the hibernation mode. I think the next time we'll probably see him at the Hero World Challenge is probably the last next one, right? I think probably.
Exactly. Yeah, he'll come out for his own tournament.
Yeah, the Heroes, where is it now? I can look at it now.
Like November, so probably, right? Late
November. Yeah, end of November. So I'll probably, you'll see him there, and then see him at the Tournament of Champions at the couple weeks after that. And then then you got Torrey Pines after that. So yeah, he'll be in hibernation mode for a while.
Yep, people, I've heard theories that Tiger Woods will like make a surprise appearance at one of these fall swing tournaments, but I would highly doubt it. He's got the one win under his belt, and he played like 6 weeks in a row, 5 weeks in a row, one off, and then the Ryder Cup where you play like a billion holes. Yeah, I said it, like he was gonna wear out eventually, and he apparently did. I don't know if it was him, his teammate. I wasn't watching close enough to know that, but he didn't win.
Yeah, the only one I mean, he's got to play. They're playing that Phil Tiger match, if that's still going to be going on.
That's a good point.
Later on, but he's got to. The only one I think of the fall swing I would think Tiger might play in is the Shriners in Las Vegas. But like after this week, they're doing the Asian tour for a while. The off season tour that they do. And then the next, I think, then Shriners in Las Vegas in early November. And then maybe Sea Island, but I wouldn't think that's a course that he'd play. So, yeah, I mean, you're not going to see him for a while. I mean, for sure.
Yeah, you know what? You're right, though. I think it would make a lot of sense for him to show up at the Shriners in Las Vegas, seeing as they will be playing in Las Vegas. And it's much closer to when that match is going to go down.
Right, and you're not going to see Tiger play in like colder weather climates, especially in the winter. Like the only spot he's going to play in is a spot he knows it's going to be somewhat warm when he goes and plays there because of his back and stuff. So, I mean, all that stuff plays into it.
Yep. Yep, I definitely agree with that. I can hear your phone going off, but
some lady is yelling at me. I don't know what that is.
I have a dog in back of me for the first time ever, so that's a new experience for me. I'm loving it. I'm still not a dog owner, but I'm watching a dog, and I don't know how people have kids, because I can't even bring this dog out 2 times a day without feeling like I am at a major loss and it's a total inconvenience.
Well, luckily, yeah, my little one's in bed right now, so I don't have to worry about that too much. But let's talk about some Napa Valley. Like you said, we talked about Phil being in the field and maybe taking his check and bouncing. But I mean, if you are a golf nut like we are, this is actually, some of these tournaments are kind of fun because you get to see golfers that you normally don't get to see. And a lot of these guys, especially these young guys, you know, last year we saw guys like Austin Cook and Cantley and Patton Kizzire and Ryan Moore and Brandon Steele won here again last year. But like you see a lot of the guys, those guys that I just named during those fall swings get their first wins. And this is how they keep kind of get the, they get their tour card for a good amount of years. So it's kind of interesting to see who can step up and do that during this fall swing.
Yeah, yeah. I think this is like a – I'm hearing myself now. It's a very important time of the year because, like you said, for a lot of these people, this is their chance to do something that'll last long term. They pull off a win here. Patton Kizzire won back-to-back in the fall swing last year. And then kind of disappeared, but guess what? He's going to be on the PGA Tour for at least like 5 years, no matter how bad he plays. So it's big for a lot of these players. And I probably spent a little too much time digging into some of these new names we're seeing. There's, I want to say, 15, between 15 and 20 web.com tour players who are going to be making appearances this week. For not necessarily their first time on the PGA Tour, but some of them their first time. Some of them we've seen at 1 to 2, maybe 5 PGA Tour events quietly over the last few years. And there are some names out there and there's some real talent. So it's something to break down. It's something to look into. If you can be ahead of the curve on one of these guys, you can profit quite a bit off of them. If you were on Patton Kizzire last year, 2 weeks in a row, I'm sure you can remember that week very clearly.
So yeah, break down the course for me. What's it look like this week?
Yes. So we've got Safeway Open, Napa, California, like you said, Silverado Resort and Spa, the North Course. It's a little over 7,100 yards and a par 72.
Always like
par 72. What was that?
I always like my par 72s.
Exactly. Yeah, I feel like we've been in a big swing of par 70s, and I've been preaching par 4, par 4, par 4, which is interesting because we're always looking at par 4s. So this is going to be the fifth year in a row that we've seen Silverado. Always, it's been kicking off the fall swing for 5 years now. Since 2014, Brendan Steele is – or 2015, 5 years. That's crazy. Brendan Steele, back-to-back winner, 2017, 2018. It is interesting to go back 1 or 2 years and start looking at some of these names. Even Tony Finau finishing runner-up here last year. Who knew at that time what kind of year that guy was about to have?
Yep.
It's career changing. It's life changing. He just went to the Ryder Cup. Patton Kizzire actually finished runner up here in 2017. So that's a bit foreshadowing of his following year. And then Emiliano Grillo won here in 2016, which he also had quite a season last year. And then Sangmun Bae in 2015. I'm excited to start seeing him out there again, hopefully. So it's a pretty straightforward course. Like I said, it's a little over 7,100 yards. We're going to have 4 par 3s on the longer side of par 3s, 175 to 240. Par 4s are all over the place. There's probably 3 that are gettable by some of these mashers out there. So the long drive is, you know, it could be helpful there. And then you got 4 par 5s, 538 to 575. They're pretty long, but you're going to see people hit getting them into the cut line over the last 4 years has ranged from even to -2. I would expect probably on the lower side just because that's time for you and that's how it goes. Some of the stats I'm probably going to be looking at, driving accuracy. You're not going to see water on the course other than a few of the par threes, but it always helps to be in the fairway. I have not heard anything about the rough. I don't recall it being anything too crazy, but if you're missing the fairway by more than a few yards, you're probably going to have some difficulty. There's going to be a lot of holes. It's only 7,100 yards, so you're not going to have to hit driver everywhere. Being in fairways is going to be important. And then, as always, I'm looking at DraftKings points, birdies gained. Here, I'm going to be looking pretty closely at strokes gained par five, and then your usual greens in regulation, birdies gained, bogeys avoided. I want to keep it pretty simple here. Look into some of these new names, see who's been playing well and who has played well here in the past, and kind of take it from there. Anything I missed?
No, the only thing I usually can remember about the Safeway Open every year that it's played, and since I've been playing DraftKings, is that Brandon Steele wins. So if you think that you're going to be against like the grain and try to fade Brandon Steele, I wouldn't recommend fading him too much, because as we mentioned kind of early before, his course history is very good. So even if you think he's not going to, if you want to fade him, I wouldn't do that as much, because he just seems to play here and play really well here. And if you look like I said, if you look at some of the course histories, some of these guys, actually one guy who does play well here is Phil. Last 2 years he's had some top tens, but I recent form, I would not give him the benefit of the doubt what he's going to do. But it is interesting to see if Martin Lard, or Party Marty, 23 strokes gains against the field over the last 4 years. He's got a couple top tens, a top 20 last year. You mentioned Griot. Ches Reavy is, you know, a ball striker extraordinaire, going to put in the fairway. He's had a bunch of top 25s, nothing in the top 10, but he's definitely, strokes gained for this course has been pretty solid.
And he was turning around towards the end of last season too. He was kind of on and off all year, and on and off when he got hot, he would kind of like miss a cut and then be hot again. But man, I'm a Chez guy.
Yeah, I mean, if you look, like I said, if you look at the guys who have strokes gained history here, or at least to have good history, is the guys put it in the fairway, don't hit it extraordinarily long, or just get, you know, solid short ball strikers. Ryan Moore, Scott Brown, Scott Piercy, your boy Tyrone Van Oswegen. Did I pronounce that correctly?
I love that you know he's my boy.
Yeah, he is your boy. I know. Didn't he help you win the big prize there the one year?
The big prize, that was Thorbjørn Olsen.
Oh, Olsen. Okay. But, I know you've been.
Oswegen. Yes, I've been on him in the past. I do. He's randomly very good.
Yeah, and he's
got, and always cheap.
He's got one miscut here, but he does have two top tens over the last few years. So, I mean, like I said, it is course history is a thing. At least that's what I believe in. And it can be very helpful, especially if you're playing in definitely cash games, or at least trying to find fillers, because a lot of these guys with good course history are low in salary. I mean, Martin Lard is $7,300, Reavy 76, Hunter Mahan, which is interesting. And I think Hunter, if I'm not mistaken, has been in okay form. I think he played a little bit on the web.com recently and has been playing okay. I think that's correct.
I believe he just recently like re-secured his card.
Yeah, and he's got a good history here, so maybe that's, you know, if he's trying to make a surge, he might be a good play. Then Scott Piercy, Ryan Moore, Scott Brown, and then, man, this guy, it just seems like he pops up. He's like the horse for course at certain places, and that is Fabian Gomez. It just seems like some courses really fit his eye, and he's hasn't missed a cut here in the last 3 years he's played here. And yeah, all of those guys are pretty quality picks if you're looking for low bargains. And it'll be interesting.
Yep.
Interesting to see.
Yeah, there's definitely a few guys that are going to pop when you're looking at tournament history. And then some of these guys up top that I really love this time of year, because you're going to start seeing some names that you are going to slowly realize you're going to be seeing for a while. Like I mentioned Emiliano Grillo, I mentioned Tony Finau, you're kind of looking to be, like I said, ahead of the curve on who's next. And right up top, I think we're pretty much looking at DraftKings is going by name recognition a little bit up top.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, when we're looking 11-6, where Patrick Cantlay is, down to 10,000, Emiliano, more or less, that's kind of what you would expect here.
Right.
And then from there, it's going to get a little interesting. So let's start right there. Let's start 10,000, DraftKings 10,000 up to 11,600. We're talking Patrick Cantlay, Brant Snedeker, Phil Mickelson, Ryan Moore, Joaquin Niemann, my guy, and Emiliano Grillo.
Yeah, I mean,
who are you interested in there?
Honestly, I mean, I probably will. I'm trying to fill out a lineup now. I think we talked before you even get on the pod. I'm probably only going to play one lineup this week. And the reason why I usually do that, I think I've played and said this before. My bankroll isn't that big, but what I try to do is I try to narrow it down to guys I feel really good about, and I play one lineup in several different contests. So I'll have one lineup in a 50, like a double up. I'll have one lineup in a triple up because that will help me just in case I don't get a 6-for-6. I can still cash and still make money for the week if I get a 5-for-6. That is pretty good. And then, of course, I'll play a couple GPPs, maybe a single entry in, like a $3 big one. Because a single entry helps me with the staying more towards the chalk. I can be more chalky in a single entry. And then if my lineup hits, I want it in the big GPPs so I can win some money if it does happen. So so my strategy going in was not to play any of these guys in the top. But now that we've talked a little bit, I'm always a Cantlay guy. I'm always – if Cantley's there and he's in a bankroll that I can play, I'm going to play him. He's just a really solid player. You can always count on him to be – in contention or near the top. I know CBS or NBC doesn't want him there because he's going to take forever to hit a golf shot. But if I can fit Cantlay in a lineup, which looks like I might be able to do, I'm going to play him. But if you're gonna look at other guys, Ryan Moore would be a guy I'd like, but I just don't like paying that much for Ryan Moore. Solid player, but he's not a 10-7 guy. He is... you can make the argument that Cantley's not an 11-6 guy, but Cantlay is by far the most talented guy in this field, other than maybe you could say Niemann, your boy Niemann, at 10-3, which I would probably consider playing. And then that's it. I mean, there's no other guys that like pop out to me. Like last year, like you mentioned, Finau would have popped out to us. Like, all right, I would play Finau. Like, that's the guy. All right, he finished tied for second last year. He was probably worth the amount of money you were paying for him last year. But other than that, I mean, that's kind of my strategy looking at it right now.
Yeah, so I have to agree with you with Cantlay. He is a guy you can be pretty confident that's going to be up there. What I don't like about him this week is simply 11-6. That is like the typical Dustin Johnson price in any event. Like we're talking, you go back to, I can't think of what the event is, but there's two or three of them where you see like a Dustin Johnson and maybe like a Ricky Fowler, and then it kind of thins out like some, like a Webb Simpson and down from there. And you will see Dustin Johnson 11-6, Ricky Fowler 10-9, and then the rest of the field. I just think 11-6 is maybe a bit much for Patrick Cantlay, having no history at the tournament in the past 4 years at the course. He was playing well throughout the playoffs. He had a good season. He is Patrick Cantlay. His game fits the course. It makes sense. But it's a lot of money to ask for him. Brant Snedeker and Phil Mickelson. They're Brant Snedeker and Phil Mickelson. We talked about Phil. He's in terrible form. Snedeker.
That's just
it's so hard price to pinpoint these days. It's yeah. I mean, it's a name price. The 11-3 is just simply too much. But, you know, like, Brad Snedeker could go out there and win it, but I'm willing to take that risk and hop on down the three following names, Ryan Moore, Joaquin Niemann, Emiliano Grillo. I like all three of them. Ryan Moore, like you said, he is going to hit fairways and he's going to hit greens, hopefully hit greens, and then hopefully from there make some putts. I think he's a safe cash option. 10-7 is expensive for him, but we saw him in some tournaments last year in the middle of the season being like way, way top priced option. People were loving him. And then he just like disappeared into the sevens and sixes for a while.
Right.
And then you could make some money off of him there. And now he's right back up to the top. I don't mind it. Like, I like it for this kind of course, for this field. I really do like it. Joaquin Niemann is probably my favorite play. I just think this guy is going to be, you're going to see him this year. He's bound to be up there. I would put money on that he'll be winning this year. I think he has just, his game is fantastic. Let's leave it at that. And then Emiliano Grillo, he had a good playoff run too. He didn't do great in the BMW, and that kind of, I mean, that ended his season technically, but he finished T7 at the Dell Technologies Open. He's only 10,000. He won here in 2016. And I think that's a great price if you start looking below him. The names you see in comparison to their price, and probably right there, Ryan Moore, Joaquin Niemann, Emiliano Grillo. I want to play all three of them, and I'll probably find a way to do that. Maybe not in the same lineup, but those are the three guys I'm really looking at.
Yeah, I think your best value there is Niemann by far. You got the most talent out of near other than Cantley, but if you're looking for value and talent, Neiman's your guy.
Yeah, I definitely agree. So I guess speeding this up, now we're looking in the below 10K region. So let's go from 8K to 10K. I talked a bit about web.com players and some names that you might not be as familiar with. This range starts off with Denny McCarthy at 9-7. I wish he was just buried in the sevens and people just didn't even like realize who he was or what was going on. But he just won the web.com tour championship. He had three top tens in four web.com starts in the season. He played a bunch on the PGA Tour very quietly. I don't think anyone ever talked about him.
Right.
And he did okay. I think he only missed two cuts in his 13 PGA Tour starts. Finished fourth at the Punta Cana. It was kind of a secondary event to a WGC possibly. And he had four top 25s on the PGA Tour. So he was right there. People might not even recognize who he is at all.
Yeah, I mean,
which I like.
Yeah. No, that's what you're looking for. I mean, if we're talking, he's a good. If you know golf, you know McCarthy's is a talented kid. And then, like you said, if we're looking for guys that are, you know, probably gonna maybe snag that first win, the Hostler and List are on top of that list for me. Bud Colley's back from his accident too. He's playing again. He's always a solid ball striker. And like you said, we talked about Se-Moon Bae. He's back and seems like was in decent form when he started playing. All those guys, solid ball strikers. Everybody's going to pack up on Luke List. I am always a big Luke List guy. He's just a guy. He can really play any course. He really can. He's just a solid ball striker. The only issue he can get in sometimes is obviously his putting. Can be terrible. Three putting from 7 feet can drive you insane when you're watching him stat tracker. But he's always going to put himself in position, especially if he makes the cut or if he starts out hot. He's going to be there. And in Hostler, he was so close last year at getting that first win a couple times. So he's like one of those younger guys that I think I would really like to play during the fall swing, because I think he can sneak in there somewhere and get that first win.
Yep, both very interesting options. I think Luke List, his name recognition is huge now. Just because of the pretty long stretch of very, very good play that he had last year. So that'll be interesting. Maybe more of a cash game play because I don't see him missing the cut in this field.
Right.
8,800. I think it's a pretty modest price for who he is. People also love Ollie. I'll probably be staying away from him because I kind of love fading him.
Yeah, I'm not a big Ollie guy.
Yeah, I know. I totally agree. You know, people see him hit the 2-iron or whatever it is, the stinger off the tee. People love it. But guess what? You ever seen Joaquin Niemann do that? Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes. He's like, yes. Just play Niemann. Do me a favor. Brendan Steele, back-to-back winner. I mean, you can't really look away from him, but he did miss three cuts to start off the Wyndham, the Northern Trust, the Deltec. Missed cut. 64th at the BMW. That's, you know, bottom 10 in that field. He's not in great form, but he's 9,000 coming off back-to-back wins, so you got to think about it a bit. Dropping down, Kevin Tway, Chris Kirk. Kevin Tway, I'd probably, he's always a bit of a, you never know what to do with him, but in this field at 8,700, I'm willing to look past him. Chris Kirk was kind of my cash game option for a while, and he just pissed me off one too many times. I don't know. What do you have any feelings on Chris Kirk?
I played him more at the end of the last season. And he's a steady cut maker. Just the thing is, and I've gotten better at this, it's just because you get your guys make the cut doesn't mean they're going to score more points. That's the one thing that I keep trying to tell myself is, and I keep learning, like, just because you get a 6 or 6 and that Chris Kirk makes the cut on the mark doesn't mean he's going to score you any more points to help you make any more money. Now, yeah, you may.
Yeah. When he finishes 76th and you watch him all day and all you see is par.
Right. When he makes the cut. By a stroke and it's 1 under par and he ends the weekend at 1 under par, he's not doing anything for you when it comes to DraftKings because you're not scoring any place points and you're not scoring any more birdie points and you're just making par all week. So I would prefer to kind of fade off of him because sometimes if you get a young guy that can score a lot of points and miss the cut because he double bogeys or something like that, he still may score you more points than some of these classic guys that can that just are cut makers and try to get the checks. So that's just to be careful too. I'm always more in the sense of like I understand the smart play to try to get the 6 for 6, but also understanding that it's probably better to look for guys who can score you DraftKings points because in the end that's going to be more beneficial than making a cut.
100% agree with you there. Two guys that come to mind, Harold Varner and Peter Uihlein.
Correct.
Harold Varner, especially, the man can get birdies, but he can also put up a double bogey here and there. We all know that.
Right.
But I think he's one of those guys I'm keeping an eye on because I think he has some extreme potential.
Man,
and I don't think I'm alone there.
Down there. That's a steal.
Yeah. Yeah, and I knew you would think that when I heard his name.
Yeah, Uihlein is a pretty solid pickup if you can fit him in your roster at 8,200 because he's one of the more talented players in the field right now.
Yeah, no, definitely. I definitely agree with you. I like Harold Varner and Peter Uihlein. There's some interesting names in there, but I will jump on down to my next web.com. candidate, and that is Cameron Davis at 7,900. He finished T3 in the web.com tour championship, had 4 other web.com top 25 since August. He looks like he's one of the ones that's in good form. I tried to go through all of these guys' recent play to see which ones were actually playing well. Some of them have like, you know, 1 or 2 wins or like a 3 top fives, but they were in like June or July. And you're not so interested in that person. But Cameron Davis appears to be one of the InformWeb.com tour players who will be making an appearance this week, and I think is going to go very low own because not a lot of people are going to be looking at Cameron Davis and thinking, hey, who knows? But 7,900, definitely someone you can fit in there in some tournaments.
Right. Ooh, all right.
You have anyone else from, I'd say, like, from there, you jump down to the obvious Jamie Love mark. I've been following Andrew Landry for the past 6 months. I love what he's doing. So Andrew Landry at 77 and Jamie Lovemark also at 77. Two guys I'll be looking at.
Yeah, we mentioned Mahan with his course history. So if you're looking for probably a low owned GPP, I would think Mahan's going to be one of those guys to do it. Streelman's always a good guy to play in these shorter courses. You know, he just seems to, you know, he's going to put it in the fairway and he's going to make a ton of birdies at certain points. It just depends on when. Sometimes when it comes to Streelman, he's going to start off hot and then fade back, or he's just not going to quite get hot enough until the weekend. So, it just depends on when Streelman's going to get hot is when it's going to, help you out. But, no, and then who else we got down through here? We mentioned Party Marty, and then
Bronson Burgoon.
Oh yeah, I'm definitely playing Burgoon.
Yeah, I had a feeling you were going to say that.
Darling. He's going to be our darling. He's going to be my darling until it was so weird the way we've mentioned this before, and I've been on is I just looked at his stats one day and I played him. And tracked him for a while. I think it was at the, it was at the Quicken when he finished tied for six. And I just tracked him and watched him. And he bombs it and he hits fairways. The one thing, his short game is not there, but he could ball strike the heck out of it. And he went on a solid run there for a while. And he actually even made the playoffs. And it was just interesting to see his progression throughout the year. And even in the tournaments that he was playing in where there was a bigger field, he was still kind of making cuts. And, he was tied for 11th at the Northern Trust. So he might be one of those guys that, during the fall swing kind of bursts out and everybody goes, who the heck is this guy? So, that would be interesting. Or I'm definitely going to play Burgoon this week.
Yeah, I totally agree, and his price kind of shocks me a bit. And then I would say Kevin Streelman is another safe cash option again, like as much as he became probably not so safe last year. This is the type of field where I am fully confident in saying he is a safe play. If you're looking for a mid-range option, if you're looking for a duo right there in the mid-range, 75-75, play Kevin Streelman and Bronson Burgoon. Why not?
Right.
Probably two guys that I would put a large percentage on making the cut. And then I think both of them have the talent to be up there. Like, Streelman's had good course history. Bronson Burgoon actually did well here last year, too.
So yeah, he did.
Two guys I do definitely like there. And then in the low sevens, I actually have like an interesting list of names here via the web.com tour. I'll put these on our cheat sheet in the Slack chat I'll probably post it in the Slack chat too, but we put up a lineup logic cheat sheet every single week. I haven't even mentioned that yet. I will definitely put out my top 10, I'll say, 10 favorite web.com new names you're going to see this week. But in this range, I'm going to start it off with Kramer Hickok. He's 7,400. He's got no course history here. You're not going to see anything. No one's going to think anything. Number two on the web.com money leaders. He won in September. He had a T8 after that in September. Fantastic form. This is like the guy I was looking for. I was looking for someone like would be quietly in there that is going to go low owned, is in good form, and also has long-term proven talent. And this is kind of like it right there. Kramer, Hickok, 7,400. Keep an eye out. And then Venmo me when you win.
There you go.
No, jump it down below. All right, so jump it down below. You mentioned Party Marty, 7,300. I am fully in on that pick. And then that brings us to pretty much this huge, huge, huge grouping of 7,200 and below, which is going to get very interesting. And you can probably start making money here. Anyone that stands out to you? We mentioned Scott Piercy. I don't, you know, do what you want with him. He'll probably make the cut. He reminds me of a, well, what's his face? Getting pars all the time.
Bill Haas?
That's how boring. Chris Kirk. Chris Kirk and Piercy together. I've said that before. It's like, I get the two mixed up. They're both so boring. And then you got Chesson Hadley, who people are almost bound to be on, but I just cannot do it the way I saw him play towards the end of the season.
Right.
And that just, like, no thank you. If you're looking for a web.com bomber, Cameron Champ, he's made a few appearances on the PGA Tour. And then also at 7,100 is Lucas Glover, who is fully back via the web.com tour. And I don't know his current situation with his wife, which maybe you should do a quick Google search, figure out how his life is going. But I would imagine it's going better because he's been playing very well. And 7,100 seems like a good price for him. I guess actually two more names. I didn't mention two more names above 7,000. Two guys that I've been long-term on that I really like. Joel Dahmen. I like him as much as I like Bronson Berggoen. They are probably my two favorite up-and-comers of last season. And then I would put number three on that same list is Sam Burns. But he doesn't appear to have been playing quite as well as the other two. So Bronson Berggoen, Joel Dahmen, up-and-comers that we became familiar with last year. Sam Burns, three on that list. So far, web.com, Denny McCarthy, Cameron Davis, Kramer Hickok. That is my kind of sleeper list right there so far. Yeah. Anyone you like from 7,000 to 7,200, Jared?
Just a quick note. I did see Jonas Wagner is in the field. If you're looking for a guy that can just call in the fairways all day, he's a good little bet. And then I did see, which is interesting, Danny Willett is in the field, which I know, you know, form-wise, it hasn't been great, but he's still, you know, if at 7,000? That might be a good little flyer to take on Danny Willett, especially in this field. I mean, Willett's usually playing in fields that are pretty solid and not making the cut. So, I mean, if you're looking for somebody maybe to at a 7,000 mark to maybe make the cut, he'd be it. And then Grayson Murray at 7,000 too. Guy's got a boatload of talent. Don't know really what his health is in heading into the season. I have to kind of look. I looked that up before going in. But whenever it seems like Murray's in the field and he's healthy, he's going to make a crap ton of birdies and score you some DK points and always have a chance to win. So I would definitely look into him.
Yep. He's always a very interesting option. I like those couple picks there. If I didn't exhaust all the options
beforehand,
one other name, or is he 7,000? Right. Sung Jae-im, number one on the web.com money list for the year. He won in late August, and he's only 7,000. So and maybe another sleeper. Him, I'm probably not as confident with. Like I said, I'm really looking for recent form out of these guys too, because they're on the PGA Tour. Suddenly things really matter. I think you got the added pressure. So someone like Grayson Murray at 7,000, who's been there, Danny Willett, like you said, and then you got your Joel Dahmen and Sam Burns. I kind of put them like a grade up because they've been there. They've done that. They're used to it. So some of these guys, that's where things get a little interesting in terms of they're in a new situation and they've got the nerves. Like it's there's an added, like they really want it, which is a good thing, but we know golf is a game that it's all situation and it's all environment and it's all attitude and what's going on inside of your head. So keep those things in mind. And let's throw out some darts at below 7,000. Anyone you have immediately in mind?
Yeah, the one guy that stands out for me, especially on courses that are shorter, and you have to play some shots, is Scott Brown. He's usually always a very good, steady. If you know, you can look at his logs and stuff like that and see he's pretty much up and down, but the courses that he's on are shorter courses, like 7,100, and he can make some shots and he can score on par fives too if they're not too long. He can score a lot of birdies for you once he gets going. He's always a good veteran for that, and he does have good course history here as well. So that would help out. I look for Scott Brown there. And then the only other guys really, I think we mentioned Gomez before. Because just like I said, he fits a certain course, and he seems to be this course seems to fit his eye a little bit. And then I did notice I thought I probably wouldn't play him, but to see that Freddie Couples is in the field, that's interesting.
definitely very interesting.
He's like he's probably doing the Phil Mickelson, collecting that check and heading out after a couple days in Napa Valley. but other than that. Another straight-laced hitter like Plotter is Jim Herman. He's in the field. If you want to fly old veteran flyer, that's probably in for a couple of nice vacation, and but might make some heyways. Jim Herman, but no one else really in there. I'm not going to scrape down to the bottom of the barrel, especially when everything's up front there. James Hahn, I noticed too, is way down there at 6,600. Very interesting that he's that far down. His course history must be terrible.
Yeah. Those are definitely good things to mention. At least notable at the very least. So I mentioned Sungjae. I'm gonna throw out two more of my rookies here. 7,000, Anders Albertsen, he's 7,000, so this isn't really quite dart range, but he's number three on the web.com money earnings list, and then he's had two top tens in September. Good form there. Love that. And then I'm going to throw this one out because I kind of made myself love this, whether I should or not. 6,200. Ooh. Jose de Jesus Rodriguez, 6,200. He's won twice this year on the PGA Tour Latin America. He won Player of the Year on that tour. He's had three top tens. He won in April, and he finished 12th on the regular season money list. He's been playing well in the past couple months, and really he just had like a huge season. I know the competition is totally different, but the guy can hit the ball clearly, and he's 6,200. So something to keep an eye on there. And then my boy Dominic Bazzelli at 6,200, which I love to tout, but man, he has just not been playing great. Which is kind of sad because this is a big stretch of tournaments for him. I follow him very closely because I played with him as a kid, and I'm rooting for him. And he took an injury exemption, basically, from the playoffs last year. Struggled through the latter half of the 2018 season. He kept playing very good golf on Thursday and Friday, And then in the last few holes, it was literally like he just had this mental block where he was three above the cut line, and then he just like had a horrendous like last few holes and would miss the cut. It was painful to see, but like we know what this guy's capable of. He was right up there in some of these smaller field tournaments, these lower end fields, for like quite some time. And these next 4, 5, 6 weeks are very big to him. They pretty much granted him the fall swing to try to get some points and try to retain the card. If not, we'll be seeing him back down on the web.com tour. But I agree with you. Tyler Duncan at 6,800 is someone I need to shout out because I think he had a very good season. He's had good course history here. You mentioned Scott Brown. And then I got, Wyndham Clark at 6,200 is another big web.com tour name. And then Jose de Jesus Rodriguez, $6,200 options. Love it. I think we've thrown our darts out there. I will publish a little more of this via the cheat sheet. Hopefully, Jared, if you have time, you can throw your picks on there too. You got anything else to add?
No, I don't. It's like I said, it's good to get back and talking golf with you. Oh, I did have one thing less to mention is I'm glad I beat you in fantasy football this week. That was nice. Got the victory. I got myself to 500. And man, you
I thought you were talking DraftKings. I was going to say you're wrong.
On DraftKings, you actually did end up beating us. But we're talking about like season long fantasy here. And I'm up to 500 in that league, and you're in the basement, my friend. You're not.
It looks like I may be jumping in a pond in a golf skirt, and quite honestly, I think it's very possible. If you look at that team, my team is trash. Like I have no chance.
But I will give you credit though. You did win our. We have a weekly DraftKings league with the people that golf with us. Even got some ladies in the league. And, you came out on top. I finished in second. But, that's always a fun little league that we do for DraftKings, and that helps me out. Been playing a lot of Gurley and Zeke Elliott this year, and that's helped me out. I've built a nice little DK bankroll with that, with playing some 50-50s and playing our league. So that's been it's been nice.
Yeah, no, I mean, I love that league. Winning does not hurt. Alvin Kamara never hurts. And knowing the cheap wide receivers to throw in there when you're talking Sunday, Monday, it's always very interesting. And I'm always Sunday mornings are quite the sweat for me, and I love it. It's a great time of year. We got the fall swing in golf. We got football. Lineup Logic. One last quick shout out for Lineup Logic. We got NBA going on right now, NBA preseason. We got our cheat sheets. We have our stat models going out for that. Golf, I'm going to be doing a cheat sheet. I'm going to be putting on a model every single week. LineupLogic.com, Patreon.com/LineupLogic. Join our Slack chat, join everything. We've got it all. It's going to be a good year. Jared, thank you very much for joining me this week, and hopefully you'll be able to make it long term going forward.
Yeah, steady. Hopefully we'll be a steady contributor.
That sounds very good to me. All right. Talk to everyone next week. Good luck this week. Hit me up on Twitter. Jared, your Twitter is Jared Smith, CNY. If you follow me, you can find him there or search him. I am Donald Remington. Donald Remington, REMINGTON. Follow Lineup Logic, DFS. Good luck this week. See you next week.